In the shadow of the Andes Mountains, on the world's highest navigable lake, is Lake Titicaca on the border of Peru and Bolivia in South America. The Yuru or Yuros people live on this lake. And when I say they live on the lake, I mean they live on this lake. Not on natural islands, not on boats, not on those sweet little huts you see built out over in Fiji, over the water, but on floating reeds. For hundreds and probably thousands of years, the indigenous Yuru people have used the totora reed, which is plentiful along the edges of Lake Titicaca. They use it to make their homes, their furniture, their boats, and the actual islands that they live on. Their boats, which are shaped like canoes but have animal heads at the bow, are used for fishing and to bring visitors to the island. The islands are usually moored to the bottom of the lake, but can be moved if necessary. As reeds disintegrate from the bottom of the islands, which are about 4 to 8 feet thick, residents must add more to the surface, which is soft and occasionally spongy. The purpose of the island settlements was originally a defensive one. If there was a threat on shore close to them, they could just move the island, live on a different part of the lake. Each island has a collection of simple reed houses, and the biggest island has a watchtower. Even tiny outhouse islands were created, as the ground roots of the outhouse islands helped absorb the waste. Now, some of us probably feel like we're constantly working on our houses. This takes it to a whole new level. The larger islands house about 10 families, while smaller ones, are only about 30 meters wide or so, house 2 or 3 families. The totora reeds serve many purposes for the Yuru. The dense roots that the plants develop and interweave form a natural layer called chelae, and that supports the islands. Now, they're anchored with ropes attached to sticks driven into the bottom of the lake, so they don't just float around constantly. The reeds at the bottom of the islands rot away fairly quickly, so new reeds have to be added frequently, every few weeks, to the top. It's exciting for tourists when walking on the island to sink down a little bit. It's especially important in the rainy season when the reeds rot much faster. Now, each step on an island sinks about 2 to 4 inches, depending on the density of the ground underfoot and how old it is. As the reeds dry, they break up more and more as they are walked upon. As they break up and get moisture to it, it starts to rot, and a new layer has to be added on top. It is a lot of work to maintain these islands. Because the people living there receive so many tourists now, they have less time to maintain everything and more feet walking on the islands. Tourism provides financial opportunities for the natives living there while simultaneously challenging their traditional lifestyle. Around 2,200 Yuru descendants were counted among a 2011 census, although only a few hundred still live on and maintain these reed islands. Most have moved to the mainland at this point. Food is cooked with fires placed on piles of stones on top of the reed islands. Much of the Yuru's diet and medicine also revolve around these same totora reeds used to construct the islands. When a reed is pulled, the white bottom is often eaten for its iodine content, and the white part of the reed is called the chulo. The Yuru rely on totora reeds in the same way that the Andean people of Peru rely on the cocoa leaf for a variety of things, both hunger and the harsh climate. When in pain, they may wrap the reed around the body part that is in pain. If it's hot outside, they sometimes roll the white part of the reed in their hands and split it open and place it on their forehead, and it's cool to the touch. The reeds are a primary source of food among many other things. They also make a reed flower tea from it, which some of us would like, I'm sure. Local residents fish ispi, karachi, and catfish. Trout were introduced to the lake from Canada in 1940, and kingfish were introduced a little while after from Argentina. The Yuru also hunt birds such as seagulls, ducks, flamingos, and graze their cattle on these floating islands. They also run craft booths aimed at the numerous tourists who visit some of the islands each year. The Yuru traded with the Aymara tribe on the mainland, intermarried with them, and eventually abandoned their own language several hundred years ago. This Uru tribe predated and were conquered by the Incan Empire, primarily, which heavily cut down on their numbers as they were made to pay taxes and some were made slaves to the Incan Empire. It is safe to say that this type of Uru lifestyle takes a massive amount of diligence. To be constantly building up your house for your safety while it simultaneously rots away on the other side is a never-ending job. Now, many of us are diligent in many areas of our lives. Our lives often determine what areas we have to be diligent in. If we have small children, we have to be diligent in providing for their needs. If we live paycheck to paycheck, we have to be diligent in knowing where every dollar we go or every dollar we spend goes. To remain employed, we must be diligent in going to work. To get good grades in school, you must be diligent. Perhaps one area where we are more likely to slip up or let go is our spiritual diligence. When it comes down to going to work, to finishing a project, to putting the kids to bed, eating dinner, or getting our Bible study completed, most of us don't miss too many meals. Do you find that your spiritual diligence is often the first to go, often the thing that gets put off the most? Let's try an exercise. Now, all the upcoming holy days we are looking forward to, obviously. Let's just consider the Feast of Tabernacles for a moment. When you think about what you're looking forward to when you go to the Feast of Tabernacles in a few weeks, what comes to your mind? Are all the things physical? The good food, the exotic location, the nice place to stay, getting to see your friends? The holy days are an opportunity for us to hone in on being spiritually diligent. Looking forward to spending extra time in spiritual matters and the opportunity to have much more time to be spiritually diligent. Today I'd like to give some thought as to how we might become more spiritually diligent. And this time of year is a perfect time to start, as we will have opportunity in the coming weeks. We're going to cover three principles that are brought out in Proverbs and compare those to New Testament examples within the context of spiritual diligence. Now, the book of Proverbs is often considered, usually taken in the context of good physical daily life principles and values for everyday life. We'll see today that it extends far beyond the physical applications only and into practice for our spiritual lives as well. So we will start back in the book of Proverbs, chapter 10. Be reading verses 4 and 5 of Proverbs 10. Proverbs 10 and verse 4, "He who has a slacked hand becomes poor, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. He who gathers in summer is a wise son. He who sleeps in harvest is a son who causes shame." Again, we must apply this to both the physical and the spiritual. We have to earn wages, of course, to have the necessary things in life physically. We or someone close to us had to have worked for the physical things that we have. This country was built with diligent hands, and God's blessings, of course. But as often happens, when wealth is passed down through generations, those who enjoy the benefits of wealth and prosperity but didn't put much work into it slip towards laziness. And I think we see that in the world around us very much today. What are the effects of a slack hand spiritually? It may not be as quickly evident as physically. If you don't go to work for 2 weeks, you're going to feel that pretty quickly in your bank account. If you don't pray and study for 2 weeks, is that noticeable to you? I believe to the untrained and unconverted mind, there may be no difference in your life, possibly, if you don't pray and study for 2 weeks. But to someone who is spiritually diligent, they will notice the effects of taking 2 weeks off. Notice the effects that as we might distance ourselves from God, our ways are not His ways, apart from Him. Our thoughts are not His thoughts if we aren't including Him in that process. Are we truly diligent in the spiritual? Now, the word for diligent that we read in Proverbs here means eager. Are you and I eager for spiritual things? As we mentioned earlier, we obviously look forward to the physical side of the feast. Are you as excited about the spiritual portion. The learning, the fellowship, the extra time for study, prayer, contemplation. Are you storing all of that up now while it's summer? It's easy to be a Christian right now. It's summertime. It won't always be. Are we the ant storing up now while the harvest is available to us? If we wish to store up this spiritual harvest, we must be putting in work now. If you feel like I'm constantly saying that from up here, it's because I am, and I'm always talking to myself up here. Let's go over then to a familiar parable in the New Testament, Matthew 25. Be reading a number of verses from Matthew 25 today. And based on what we've already covered, as we're reading through this, please consider this from the perspective of spiritual diligence in your life. Matthew 25 and verse 1. Then the kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Now 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. But while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. Now notice that everyone slept. Everyone has to sleep. While we're all weak humans, we have to sleep sometimes. But what is the difference between those who prepared before they slept and those who didn't? We were all inspired, so many of us, to become baptized and dedicate our lives to God at some point in our lives. But we can't keep awake from the time of baptism until Christ comes back. We have to sleep in between. It's not a short race. We have to sleep, but are we sleepwalking through all of our life? Verse 6, and at midnight a cry was heard, behold, the bridegroom is coming, go out to meet him. Then all the virgins arose and trimmed their lamps, and the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, no, lest there should not be enough for us and you, but go rather to those who sell and buy for yourselves. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you. Watch, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour which the Son of Man is coming. To watch is to be spiritually aware, to be spiritually prepared. Could this be said about me? Could this be said about you? Say someone new walks through the door. How do we get to know them? We don't know them just because they walk through the door and say, brethren, brethren, open to me, here I am. We get to know them by talking to them, by spending time with them, by perhaps enduring trials with them. Does God know us if we just occasionally walk through these doors and say, Lord, Lord, open to us? If we haven't spent time talking to him, learning from him, emulating him, how will he know us? Let's go back to Proverbs for the second principle. This will be in chapter 12, verse 24 this time. This is Proverbs 12 and verse 24. The hand of the diligent will rule, but the lazy man will be put to forced labor. Those who are diligent in their work and their lives generally seem to do pretty well. In most cases, they are proactive about their lives and not just reactive, not just always dealing with the latest problem. How hard do we proactively work at our spiritual problems, our spiritual hurdles? Hopefully we overcome most of the issues and problems we encounter at work and home, but do we put that same effort into overcoming spiritual problems? Our spiritual lulls, perhaps, where we struggle with certain things, struggle to pray, struggle to study. Are we proactive or reactive when those things arise? The lazy man that will be put into forced labor is a reactive man. He reacts to other situations, doesn't proactively do anything for himself. Go back to Matthew 25. Sorry, I should have had you hold your place there if you wanted to. A Come back here now, Matthew 25 and verse 14, and we'll do it again one more time later if you want to hold there. It's Matthew 25 and verse 14. For the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country, who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them. And to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to each according to his own ability. And immediately he went on a journey. Then he who had received the 5 talents went and traded them and made another 5 talents. Likewise, he who had received 2 gained 2 more also. But he who had received 1 went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. So he who had received the 5 talents came and brought 5 other talents, saying, Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I have gained 5 more besides them. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. He also who had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents. Look, I have gained 2 more talents besides them. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. So far, we've read of 2 proactive servants of God. 1 servant had 2 talents and 1 had 5. Why do some people have so many abilities and skills? Seems unfair sometimes. Why do things just come easily to them, it seems? Probably didn't start out that way in most cases. God gave them a small amount of talent. They honed it. They worked on it. They developed what they had. And then God gave them more, and they worked on it, and they honed it, and they developed it. And they were spiritually diligent time and time again. Perhaps sometimes we read this passage and think some people are just born with talent. Some are just given more to begin with. I don't think this is a state that some of us come out of the womb with. We have to get past hiding the 1 talent to begin with, and then we're given more. It's usually a progression. Once you receive 2, if you're spiritually diligent, you'll receive more. As we progress, then we receive 5, and so on. So go back to verse 24. Then he who had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours. Observe the reactive approach. Here we see the reactive method of, this is my situation, this is easier, I'll do this. This is less work, this is safe, this is my comfort zone. Just wait and see, someone else can take care of it. Verse 26. But his Lord answered and said to him, you wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown, and gather where I have not scattered seed. So you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers, and at my coming I would have received back my own with interest. Therefore take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. Are we taking the abilities that we have and enhancing them? Or are we taking the route of comfort? The route of reacting only to whatever happens to come our way. Let's go back to our third proverb, Proverbs 13 and verse 4. This will be Proverbs 13, verse 4. The soul of a lazy man desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made rich. The word for soul here, which the word for soul is so obviously misunderstood in general, the word here is nephesh, which actually means the person, the mind, the senses, the emotions that make us human. What does the soul of a lazy man desire? Is it spiritual diligence or immediate gratification and physical comfort? Again, the application of the physical analogy here is obvious, but what about the spiritual? What is the difference between the desires of a lazy man and the desires of a diligent person? I suspect those desires are quite different in nature from the get-go. We must be seeking the correct things in life, be committed enough to be spiritually diligent, to put in the spiritual work. To reap the rewards we're seeking, we must be growing spiritually. The goal of our diligence is to be able to serve under Jesus Christ. Are we gathering in the summer harvest now while we can? Let's go back to Matthew 25 and pick up in verse 31. We're going to end up reading the entirety of Matthew 25 today, but I hope this has been helpful looking at it within the context of spiritual diligence as we have. This is Matthew 25 in verse 31. When the Son of Man comes in His glory and all the holy angels with Him, then He will sit on the throne of His glory. All the nations will be gathered before Him, and He will separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. And He will set the sheep on His right hand, but the goats on His left. Then the king will say to those on His right hand, "Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me." Then the righteous will answer Him, saying, "Lord, when did we ever see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you as a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you?" And the king will answer and say to them, "Assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did this to one of the least of my brethren, you did it to me." Then He will also say to those on the left hand, "Depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not take me in. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me." Then they will also answer Him, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty, or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison, and did not minister to you?" And He will answer them, saying, "Assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me." The proactive versus the reactive. The righteous acts of the saints, that fine linen, clean and bright, the acts of the righteous are done in humility. It should become, and has for many of us in this room, hopefully, become nature to do good for other people. We don't have to dwell on the good that we're doing. It just should become part of our nature. Serving one another each and every week are the righteous acts of the saints. Now, sometimes it's up to us to make sure that we're on the right path. We're all on an individual journey. It can't be done for us. Let's go back to 2 Chronicles 29, if you will. Reading verses 31 through 34 of 2 Chronicles 29. This is 2 Chronicles 29, starting in verse 31. Then Hezekiah answered and said, "Now that you have consecrated yourselves to the Lord, come near and bring sacrifices and thank offerings into the house of the Lord." So the assembly brought in sacrifices and thank offerings, and as many were of a willing heart, brought burnt offerings. And the number of the burnt offerings which the assembly brought was 70 bulls, 100 rams, and 200 lambs. All these were for a burnt offering to the Lord. The consecrated things were 600 bulls and 3,000 sheep. But the priests were too few, so that they could not skin all the burnt offerings. Therefore, their brethren, the Levites, helped them until the work was ended, and until the other priests had sanctified themselves, for the Levites were more diligent in sanctifying themselves than the priests. It doesn't matter who we are in the church, it doesn't matter what role we have now. Everyone is responsible for themselves. The Levites helped the priests in this instance, I should say, and the people were more diligent in doing the sacrifices properly. All of us need to be ready to step into a role at all times with spiritual diligence and spiritual preparation beforehand. That opportunity may or may not come in this life, but it will come in the next. Let's go now to an example of spiritual diligence, one apiece for the men and for the women. We'll start with the woman whose example of diligence is pretty obvious, but I don't remember us going here in a while, so we'll go to Proverbs 31. Proverbs 31 woman is a description of the perfect qualities or type of woman, and she's characterized primarily by diligence among other qualities. Obviously, no woman or no man has been perfect since Christ. These are just qualities of a type of woman to emulate. And we will notice that many of the descriptors speak directly to how she chooses to spend her time and her energy. Start in verse 13 of Proverbs 31. She seeks wool and flax and willingly works with her hands. She willingly, eagerly seeks out work to do and does it. Verse 15. She also rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household. I can't tell you how many times my wife has got up in the middle of the night to go feed a kid while I grunt, scratch, and turn over. Verse 27. She watches over the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. The bread of idleness can be delicious. It can also be deadly in the long term. Now for the men, let's go to Colossians 4:12, where we will read of Epaphras. Epaphras is only mentioned three times in the Bible, and this verse is the summation of his being as we know it, as it's recorded. Colossians 4 and verse 12. Epaphras, who is one of you, a bondservant of Christ, greets you, always laboring fervently for you in prayers, that you may stand perfect and complete in all the will of God. Laboring fervently, other translations render this wrestling, laboring hard in prayer for others. How many of us men, do that for others? Our tendency is to protect ourselves and our families, those close to us. Our tendency is to protect physically those around us. Are we wrestling for one another in prayer? There's no shortage of work to do. To do all of these things correctly is quite a difficult task. As we mentioned earlier, it's pretty easy to notice a physical need, a physical problem around us. It's much more difficult to identify a spiritual problem under the surface. Go to 2 Timothy for my final scripture. 2 Timothy 2 and verse 15. Be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. On a weekly basis, the Yuru tribe must remain diligent to keep building upon the ground, literally, that they walk. Taking a few weeks off because other things happen to come up simply isn't an option. If the Yuru allow themselves to become complacent, literally the ground beneath them can crumble away and cause death. While it's harder for us to wrap our minds around it in this life, the same is true in the spiritual realm. Our complacency can be our undoing. We can't just let one area of the floor rot away. Just one small area can be our undoing. One small area rotting, we can fall through into the icy waters. Let's use the upcoming holy days to renew our spiritual diligence. Like the Yuru, remain ever diligent.